We are the Cat's Whiskers, and this is My Top Line. Hello and welcome to another edition of My Top Line. My name is Jonathan Bullard. I've really been looking forward to this one because we've got a great guest on this time. Royalty in Hull, around the Hull Ice Arena, I think we can describe him as. I'm delighted to welcome none other than Paul Scooby Carruthers. How are you, Scoob?
Not so bad, mate, not so bad. How's yourself?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I've really been looking forward to this one because I'm sure we're going to get some great stories out of you from all your time watching. So just quickly, your first game. So you started watching, would have been the Humberside Hawks, wouldn't it, in 1988?
Yeah, it was Humberside Seahawks. They started in 1988. I went to the first game. I actually went with a girlfriend at the time, and she's now my wife, Julie. And I took my brother as his birthday present. He'll have been about 13 at the time, I think. And I just said, what do you want to do? So he goes, I don't know. So I said, oh, the new ice hockey team started up. You fancy cracking on with that, like? So he goes, oh, go on then. Like, £2.50 at the time. I think it was £2.50 for us, and it'll be £1.25 for him. So I thought, well, that's a cheap birthday present for him. And we were hooked ever since. We just went to the first game. Anybody who hasn't ever been to a game and then just go for the first time. And then the thing with Hull was everybody had probably gone for the first time, or 95% of them. The sound of the Zamboni going round, everything like that, all stuff like that. You're trying to work out why the players were going on and off the ice all the time. And you're looking at people fighting, thinking, well, they're not even getting sent off. And you were loving it. And then the atmosphere, everybody started cheering for the goals. It was like, I think the first game, we won about 13-4 or something like that. So it was like really exciting for a lot of people. And like our kid said, do you want to go again? And I said, yeah, we'll book us in. So we went every game that season, and we never stopped going.
Like our recent guest, Andrew Turnbull, you've seen a few incarnations of teams in Humberside and then Hull. So what is the running order?
The running order is we started off with the Humberside Seahawks. The council bought them, built the rink and put the team together. Most of the players was from Grimsby, the old Grimsby Buffaloes team, a couple of imports, Mark Mackey and Dale Lambert. There was the two original, well, like Ed Lee was the original import. He lasted a day. And then they signed Mark Mackey the next night. Going on, turned into Humberside Hawks. After about 5 years, I think, when British Aerospace put in a load of money to sponsor him, and British Aerospace is just up the road at Brough, and they were selling like the Harrier Hawks, or they agreed to change the name to Humberside Hawks. The council disbanded in 1996, became back into the East Riding of Yorkshire, and Humberside got split up into four bits. So the council just pulled out, so then Keith Millens took over. He was the coach of the team, the Humberside Hawks at the time. He took it over, started up called Kingston Hawks, and then run into money problems, as usual with our teams. It got took over halfway through, I think it was the third season, turned into the Hull City Hawks for reasons so that you don't have to pay all the bill or whatever it is. It was a technical reason for it. It was only Hull City Hawks for, I think, it was about 2 months. And then we turned into Hull Thunder. They lasted about 5 years, and then Hull Stingrays, they lasted, I think it was 2002 to 2015, and then they run out of money, and we got kicked out of the Elite League, and then started off in the EPL as the Hull Pirates, which is the team that we are at the minute.
So a lot of history there. So we're looking at, what, 32 years of hockey in Hull over various different guises. And, of course, you also was announcer for a while, a couple of spells of as announcer.
Yeah, and I was an announcer for a couple of years as Kingston Hawk. Keith Millens asked us to do it because I think it was a charity thing where I did like an auction and stuff like that, and I was just having a laugh with everybody. And he said, you'd be great on the announcing. I said, do you think? So anyway, I'll give it a go. Found out that I quite enjoyed it. did that for about, I think it was nearly 2 years. Towards the end, I was just getting bringing into the game into disrepute with my music choices and stuff like that. I was up in the Gantu then, so I wasn't causing as much problems. And then, somebody else took over. And then when we became the Stingrays, Mike and Sue Pack, they brought an announcer in. And I can't remember what happened to him. I think he got a job somewhere else and he couldn't do it. And she didn't, Sue Pack just goes, "Scoble, do you fancy doing the announcing?" And I went, "I don't know." I said, "I did it a couple of years back." And she says, "Well, you know, have a go at it, because we've got nobody else." So anyway, I got the bug back again. I think I did it for about seven or eight years, right up to the last game of the Stingrays. And then when the Pirates took over, I just went, "You know what, it needs a new identity, let somebody else take it over." And that's what's happened.
You must have some great stories from your time. Anybody you're particularly upset?
I've upset our present coach, Jason Newitt.
This is the story I was hoping for.
Yeah, when he was playing for Sheffield. The longest story was where I was down at the bottom doing the warm-up and all that. And you know what it's like, the 20-minute warm-up's finished and nobody's going, you know, playing like scissor, paper, stones. You know what they're like, I want to be last one off. Anyway, there was him and I think it was Jonathan Phillips. They were just messing about and I just said, "Look, I said, you're going to have to get off, lads." And they were just looking at us, skating around and, like, playing to the crowd. And I said, "You know what I mean?" I says, "Look, if you don't stop messing about, I'm going to put ABBA on." So anyway, I ended up putting ABBA on for some stupid reason. And he just come over and give us a load of abuse. So I thought, well, that's fair game now. So halfway through the game, he got a penalty. I announced his name as Jason Chewitt, which he took offence. We was arguing in the penalty box. He threw a towel at us. I went, "Oh, that's very mature. We're like this." And he was calling us all names under the sun. But I'm thinking, while I'm doing that, I mean, no, it's unprofessional and that. And I know other teams are more professional than that. But, like, when we was the Stingrays, like, especially when Bobby took off, Bobby McEwen just says, "Just do what you want." And, like, a lot of the players were like, "You know what, we've never seen anything like this," because some of the players are coming over and saying they're getting wound up. And you could see that they were losing the rag, and they were losing the rag and making mistakes, and our players were loving it, sort of thing. But Hewitt just threw a tantrum and that. And the next game, I think we played him about 3 weeks later, and he came over and he was giving us the big daggers and all that. But little to him, he got a penalty, and I'd already bought a big box of Chewits, you know, from Macro. And I just laid them all on the thingy like that. To be fair, like, he took it as a joke, that one. He just went, "There's no," you know what I mean? It's just chirping and stuff like that. And then when he took over the Pirates, we had a forum. And he just looked over at us, and I looked over at him, and we just started laughing. And just got on with it, you know what I mean? He says, "What do you feel about me becoming here?" I says, "Well, I hated you as a player." I says, "But if you play like you played at Sheffield, I'll have no arguments." Jason Hewitt, for whatever he is, some people don't like him, but a lot of people would have loved him in their team, and he meant that he was the heartbeat of Sheffield Steelers for a long time. Some of them players that played around him were far better than him, but he got more out of them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and as a fan, I sort of like respected that.
Hmm. And of course, he's been top scorer for the Pirates over the past two or three seasons, I think it is.
Yeah,
and not only for the Pirates, but top scorer in the league as well.
He's taking a lot of minutes in, so don't get me wrong. And some of the goalies that went, especially in the first year, and not last year, the year before, when we was in the EPL and there was only like two imports and stuff like that, and some of the teams in there. It was like watching ice hockey from 1988, you know what I mean? The goalie would stand up and you'd score like 15 goals past them. Two or three of them teams in that league should have been the wreck teams with an import, if you know what I mean. So when they say, "Oh, I've scored loads of goals in that season," it was like, when you go back to the old Heineken League when players were scoring like 180 goals a season, but the goalies were rubbish. Well, not rubbish, but you know what I mean. They were as technically gifted as they are now. You sort of think, well, that's why you scored a load more goals that in that year. It's the same as the other year. Well, last season was a pretty good league season. I think everybody in that league was near enough equal. You could turn up and you wouldn't know who was going to win, which is what you want as a fan. It was a lot more enjoyable last season.
We'll crack on with your team. So, as usual, you've picked a netminder, two defencemen, three forwards, and then we'll also discuss your favourite game, favourite opposition player, your favourite goal, your favourite moment, and we'll have some honourable mentions as well. But we're going to start off, as we always do, with your netminder. So, Scoop, who is the netminder you've chosen?
It's a goalie that only played like about two-thirds of a season for us, a bloke called Colm Cavilla. He played for the Scottish Eagles, I think it was either the year before or 2 years before that, and he came to our team halfway through the season, and he replaced Patsy Reitinen, who was like a proper cult hero at the time. But Patsy wasn't having a very good season, and he replaced him. And we thought, you know, we'll see what this bloke's like. And he was absolutely outstanding. The worst thing about it was he was really, really good for us. But he left, I think it was about two games to go before the playoffs started, because he got a job. I think it was a policeman over in Canada or whatever. And he left us in the lurch, really. Because of that, I should maybe not have picked him. But on actual goalkeeping ability, he's by far the best goalie we've had playing for any old team. There was a game against Basingstoke, down in Basingstoke. I went to it, can't remember what had happened, but there was like, you know, when you're giving up like 2-0 breakaways, and there was two of them within quick succession, and he saved both of them. It was like outstanding saves, and then he just stood there, shouted at the player's box, and he just went, "That happens again, this is what I'm doing," and he just stood, you know, like he's out, you know, doing next to the goal with your arm on the top of the goal. With his blocker off, he said, "That's what I'm going to do next time this happens." And then, you know, guess what? It didn't happen again. And that was with teams with, like, I think we had Ron Shoulder at the time, so like really good professional players in there that should have known better. And he was like proper kicking off on the ice, which, from a fan's point of view, I've never seen a goalie do that before. But actual saving ability is probably the most technically gifted goalie that we've had, without a doubt.
Yeah, just 17 games for the Thunder, but 2.27 goals against average and 93.1 save percentage. So this was a quality netminder.
If we'd have kept him, we'd have won something that year for definite. It was the BNL, which is probably one of the best leagues that we've been in, because, like, you know, there's like eight imports and eight British players, so it was like a really good league, if you know what I mean. And that year, we was there or thereabouts, and if he'd have been in goal in the playoffs, you know as well as Adam, with a hot goalies win playoffs, and we'd have been there or thereabouts winning it. He went to get another job in Canada. We trained Gavin Armstrong in, I think. He did all right, but he was nowhere as good as what Cavilla was.
Looking at his stats, Hull Thunder, he stops, and there's no info on him after that. And he would only have been quite young at 26, I think he was.
So, yeah, he was only young for a goal. We took for a goal. They're reaching the peak at about 26, aren't they, sort of thing? Or they're coming into the peak.
So a case of one of those what might have been, I suppose.
Yeah, for definite. I mean, we've had some good goalies. Don't get me wrong, we've had some cracking goalies, but he's probably been the best for saving shots that you don't think anybody's going to save.
Okay, well, let's crack on and move on to your first blue liner. So, who's defenceman number one?
Big Eric Levine.
Eric Levine. So, two seasons with the Hull Thunder, 71 games, 19 goals, 48 assists for 67 points, 284 penalty minutes. A player I knew from his one season with the Panthers, the season before he joined Hull. Yeah. So, why Eric Levine for you?
It just made our team intimidating. We already had Rob McCaig in our team. So we had Rob McCaig and Eric Levine. So you can imagine teams like Fife and play and team and things like that coming to our rink and like, we don't want any of this. You know what I mean? He was just totally intimidating because he's a big unit. And in the BNL days, he was probably one of the toughest fighters in that league. And then we had Rob McCaig, who was a complete psychopath at times. I mean, he got banned from two leagues, I think, didn't he? For doing stupid stuff. He got banned here as well, didn't he, for biting somebody and all that.
Yes. He bit Murray Hansen, I seem to remember.
And then he got banned halfway through that season that Levine was in for us, because he was doing slick throat gestures to the Slough team when we was away at Slough, and he got, I think it was something ridiculous, like a 28-game ban, which took him to the end of the season, like, so that was the last we saw of him. But going back to Levine himself, he was like a cult hero, you know what I mean? He played to the fans, he loved the fans, he was like one of these. you know, the French Canadians that could speak a little decent bit of English, but it sounded like Inspector Clouseau at times, you know what I mean? And the fans loved him for that. We'd go to like fans forums and stuff like that, and he'd be looking at us, and he couldn't understand our accents. But then he found out that obviously all the fans were like shouting for him all the time, and especially when he was fighting. I think one of his last games he took on Kurt Irving, and was like one of the most hated figures in the VNL team, and he absolutely knocked him around the ice ring a few times, which made him into a bigger cult hero than what he actually was. So yeah, Big Eric was one of my favourites for a defenceman, for definite.
This was a guy who could play as well. He played once in the NHL for LA Kings.
Yeah.
As I've already mentioned, he came to Hull from the Super League, where he played for Nottingham. And yeah, he was a big unit, like you say, 6'3", a lot of muscle, and he could fight.
He could fight, and he played on the same line as Daniel Lavoie, and I think he played in Daniel Lavoie in Nottingham the year before.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and they were like, you know, when somebody's got like a good defensive partnership with somebody, like Lavoie would be like the calming influence on him, and Levine would if anybody was on the ice and was taking liberties, it sort of out sort of thing. That made him into a better player. I know, like it's Super League, like the year before. So, the BNL from the Super League was a big step down in that, but he was really, really impressive for us when we played for Thunder in the BNL.
You look at the stats, he didn't even score a goal for the Panthers, just 6 assists over 50 games. Yeah. He comes to the Thunder, and then he finds his scoring touch, 49 points in 42 games in that first season, including 14 goals. And it's always good to get a D-man who can weigh in with those important goals from the blue line.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, I think that year we had some really good players in that year as well. We had there, I think it was Corey Lyons. He was scoring at a load of points up front and that. And then to have secondary scoring from your defenceman, it just makes everything a lot easier for you. You know what I mean? When you're trying to win these games.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we'll leave the team for a minute and move on to your favourite game. So, Scooby, what is the favourite game you've seen in all the time you've been watching hockey at the Hull Arena?
It's got to be the last Stingrays home game of all time. It's got to be the Carl Lauzon overtime winner against Braehead.
I actually watched that back just before we did this to actually have a look and get a feeling for it. And the commentary from Jonathan Fernley, he goes absolutely crazy. But at that time, of course, you didn't know that was your final game. Oh. But with hindsight now, do you feel that that was very much fitting as the final Stingrays game in Hull Arena?
Yeah, it probably was. And that's probably a fitting goal to go out with as well. That whole team that season, Bobby McEwen got rid of Sylvain Cloutier halfway through the close season, and then he got Omar Pasher in as an inexperienced coach, as the coach. I think Lauzon was his assistant coach, but Pasher was the coach, if you know what I mean. We signed a load of college kids who nobody had ever heard of. The first game of the season, we played Peterborough in a challenge match away from home, and we went, and I said to our kid, I said, oh, let's wind them up. And say we're getting beat like 3-0 after about 4 minutes, sort of thing. Guess what? We were without even winding anybody up. And I'm like, what's going on here? You know what I mean? Like, nobody. I was like, oh, this is going to be one really long season. And I'm like looking, and like Curtis Dooley had signed for us again. And he looked at us, and he just like looked at us, and he was like, he couldn't believe what was going on. And he only lasted like a week, and he went back home again as if to say, oh, I've had enough of this. I'm not going to be part of this sort of thing. And then we signed another couple of players, and then it started gelling around roughly about December time. You could see the players all playing for each other and going out, you know, like, you know, when his team's getting together and that, and they were all really, and there was a player called CJ Charter, and halfway for about, he got fed up with I think homesick, you know, like some of them do, about November time. We got this other kid coming. Will Frederick just was that little cog that finished the team off, and everybody started gelling. And then towards the end of the season, we were going into games as all Stingrays, and thinking we could win every game. There was a game in Belfast that we absolutely destroyed Belfast in Belfast, which was unbelievable for Stingrays. But I mean, I'm digressing from the actual game, but that gives you what actually happened to the lead up to that final game.
Well, the first leg was a 1-0 defeat in Glasgow. And then you've got to win by two clear goals. It's 2-1, yeah. Goes into overtime, and yeah. then Cole Lauzon shows up. It was about 1:20 to go.
I was winding Zach Fitzgerald up in the penalty box. Me and him had a massive argument in the penalty box. Zach Avato came around, he said, Scobie, he said, he's going to rip you up. I said, well, I said, while he's doing it. And he was like proper going for it, you know what I mean? I was like, oh. And all the crowd was good, could all see it. And there was a point, and I think it was about 10 minutes to go. And they were still winning, like on aggregate by 2 goals. And Fitzgerald got the puck. It was harder to miss. And I thought, if he scores here, he's going to come over here. He's going to jump in the penalty box or do something. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, no. And he missed. And I thought, oh, here we go. And then Galbraith scored tying goal. And then we went into overtime. And you could see their players were on edge. You know what I mean? You could see Finity on as a coach. He was on edge and all that. And our lads were all pumped up. The crowd was buzzing. The actual arena was absolutely bouncing. And then when Lauzon took that shot, you could just see it. I mean, I could see the puck getting shot. He was in slow motion. It was directly on my angle from where I was stood in the penalty box. Whack, straight in there. Oh my God, it's probably the best I've ever felt at an ice hockey game. That, like, honestly, the whole tension of everything, nobody believed that we'd ever get there. The actual goal itself, the way the players all reacted and that, the fact that, like, we didn't like a lot of Brayhead players anyway, you know what I mean? Which made it even better. I mean, it could have been better if we'd have beat Sheffield, maybe, I don't know. But, like, at the time, it was like, and then you could, all my mates from away was going, you've been, you know, like, and you know, when you get text from everybody from,
yeah.
When something's going on. But obviously, I'm getting texts from my mates in Belfast, my mates in Bracknell, and my mates in Sheffield, and all that. Like, oh, well done, Scobie, and all that lot. And I'm just going, wait till you see the highlights. And the highlights were spectacular. Like, that's probably the best game I've seen. And we've seen some crackalackers at all, but that one, like you say, especially with it being the last Stingrays game as well, made it all more poignant, really.
For anybody who's not seen the highlights, go on YouTube and watch them, because I think it brings across what a great venue the Hull Arena is, especially when it's full. I loved going to watch games in Hull. It was my favourite away venue. So I was distraught when the Stingrays went, because I loved coming up to Hull. As you know, I love coming up to Hull.
Yeah, no, you were all used to say as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's a sadly missed arena from the Elite League, because even when half full, it still had a great atmosphere.
When I was in the crowd and we used to sit in F block and that, and they've changed it now. They've changed the home team sits right in the top of F, where F block is. But before, up until the privates came in, the UA team always used to sit right next to F block, and we used to be chirping them all day, all night. We'd chirp and chirp. Some would bite, some would laugh at you. You know, I mean, always like David Longstaff used to come up to us and he'd go, Scobie, says, I love coming to Hull. He said, and if you notice, he always used to stand right next to the plexiglass. You know, because there's like a little gap there, just so he could hear what we were singing at him. Like, he used to love it. some players thrive on it, and some players absolutely hate it. You know what I mean? But the atmosphere, when the atmosphere is going and all, it's like proper loud, and he's an intimidating ring, because you are right on. I mean, it's a bit like Fife. You know what I mean? The Fife fans, when Fife get going, that's probably the best atmosphere out there, when the Fife fans are going. You know what I mean? But when we crack on and the crowd get behind the team, it is a pretty good atmosphere there.
Okay, we'll crack on with your team now. So, second defenceman, who's that?
It's Brendan Jamieson, who we got in the last season of the Stingrays. Came over and nobody had heard of him. And he was just solid, just proper solid. Never made a mistake. One of them players that you rely on, just did the simple 100% percentages right. I think he played whatever games it was for 50 game season or whatever.
59 he played over the league and playoffs. One goal, which came in the playoffs, 20 assists, 21 points, and only 26 penalty minutes as well.
That's what I'm just going to say. I mean, so you know as well as I do, Jono, when players come over here, especially from college or whatever, and they meet the referees over this side, and some of them are like, what's going on here? I'm doing stuff here that I could get away with in North America, and I can't do it here. And he's come over here and took 24 penalty minutes in a full season, and he was first line defenceman, first line penalty killer, first line power play unit. So he was on probably on the ice probably 35, 40 minutes a game, you know what I mean? And to take only 24 penalty minutes in one season, in your first season coming to Britain as an import takes some doing, but it was just solid, you know, like really, really dependable. I mean, there's other players out there that were technically better than him, but actually, from my point of view, I loved watching him as a defenceman because he just did the defenceman stuff really good and really easy.
You've seen an awful lot of defencemen throughout your whole time watching, but this was a player who came in for the final season of the Stingrays. So he must have really stood out for you to pick him for something like this.
Yeah, I mean, like we've had some. I mean, obviously we've had like Stephen Cope. We've even had Jonathan Weave. I think he played as a forward when he came here. We had him for a couple of games. We've had all the really, really good ones. Scott Young's probably the most gifted skater defenceman. Dale Lambert, the original defender that we had, graceful skater and all that. But Brendan Jameson. There was another kid called Kelly Reid. He was my second favourite. I loved him because he was really graceful skater. Didn't take any penalties or anything like that. Just did the really simple jobs, but just thought Jameson was that little bit better than him. And in the league that he was playing, he sort of stood out more because the league that final season of the Stingrays was probably the hardest league that we've played in, if you know what I mean, with the talent that was out there in the opposing teams.
It's a shame, really, that it has to be someone from that final season of the Stingrays, but he was part of that team that did get to the playoff final weekend. So as sad as it was for the Stingrays to go out, what a way to go out.
Yeah, it was a way to. I mean, like, everybody be going, oh, it's sour grapes or whatever, but you go back to the actual semi-final when Sheffield beat us. It was a really controversial goal with about, I think, 6 seconds to go or whatever. And it was a controversial goal. And Todd Kelman was actually down there and said it shouldn't have been no goal. And he allowed it because, if you remember, he had the video replay. There was an infringement in the play. I can't remember what it was now. But there was an infringement in the play which disrupted it. Which the next, and the daft thing was, the week after when GB played in the World Championships, it's a very similar thing happened. And they disallowed that goal, the same similar sort of goal. So it was really frustrating because I think if we'd have won that, if Coventry ended up winning the playoffs, I think we'd have destroyed Coventry in that game in the final because the players, I've never seen a tighter team than that last season of the Stingrays, to be brutally honest. So all the players was like all best mates. We've had a lot more better talented players, but when you've got a team that's working for itself, that will always beat a more talented player team, if you know what I mean, especially when they've all gelled together over a season.
Well, that completes your blue line with Eric Levine and Brendan Jameson. So we're now going to move on to the player who played for opposition teams when you would have loved to play in Hull. So who is your favourite opposition player?
Some people might think it's left out of left field, but I just love watching Brandon Benedict.
Of course, 5 seasons with Belfast, over 2 spells, 4 seasons in Nottingham. In his career in Britain, he won 3 playoffs, 4 Challenge Cups and 1 league title. So what was it particularly about Brandon Benedict that you liked?
He's just a player that looks like an hockey player, as daft as that seems. He comes on the ice and he skates like a proper hockey player. He looks like a proper hockey player. And I can just imagine being in that dressing room as a young kid, looking up to somebody like that and going, you know what, I want to be like what he is. He just looks the professional type of player. He skates hard, he scores hard, he'll drop the gloves if he has to. I never saw him have a bad game, if you know what I mean. And you don't win championships with 2 different clubs and be picked again for another club and not be as good as what he is. I just thought if we could have had him, if we could have afforded him, being really happy at watching him playing for us.
From watching Benedict when he played in Nottingham, one thing that always came through about him is he never took a shift off. He gave 100% from the moment he stepped on the ice to the moment he stepped off it. Everything was left on that playing surface. There was never any regrets with him. He gave everything every single game.
And that's what you want as a fan. That's all fans asking, isn't it? We've seen these fancy damn players that will score 5 goals against a mediocre team and then not do anything, but it looks good on the stats and stuff like that. But you want to see players like Brandon Benedict play for your team because it builds everybody else up in that team. It makes them perform better. I presume. I mean, I've never played the game. I keep getting told that, but you can sort of see that a player like that would bring out the best in everybody else as a player, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, he certainly did. And he was one of those players who I think was very much unsung. He was a player who worked very hard. He come up with some great goals and some great assists, but there was always players in the team that seemed to take the spotlight away from him. And he didn't seem to mind that, but he was very much the engine, the workhorse of the teams that he played in.
Which is what you want from an actual team player that a lot of teams don't have. A lot of teams that should win championships don't have players like that. And if they had a player like that, they'd win a championship, if you know what I mean. And that's why players like him win championships.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we'll head on to your forward lines now, starting with your first forward. So who is forward number one?
It's Phil Huber.
Phil Huber had two seasons in Hull with Humberside in 94-95 and 95-96 in the old Heineken League. He played 82 games for 83 goals, 94 assists, 177 points, 224 penalty minutes. So what did you like about Phil Huber?
He came over, I think he replaced a player called Wayne Anchikovsky, who wasn't the best, and he came over. And the first game I saw him, I think he was about 24 years old and he was bald. And I'm like, we've signed a bald-headed 24-year-old player. And I'm going, what's going on here? And his first game, he was doing stuff that I've never seen as an ice hockey fan. I think it was 94, so I'd been going about, what, 6, 7 years or something like that. And he was, like, outstanding. He was, like, dumping the puck in one at one end. The players were watching him, and he'd skate to the other side of the ring to catch his own dump in when it goes right round the board, and he'll come in and he'll ping it straight back in again. He played alongside Scott Morrison and Darcy Cahill, so you can imagine how prolific that line will be in a team. You know what I mean? In a team with the three Johnson brothers as well. Jonker used to say, he says, well, what a pick-up half just picked up here with his kid. You know what I mean? And like all the other three Johnson was like, oh, what a professional he is, you know what I mean? And he's a similar sort of player to what Brandon Benedict is, if you know what I mean. He never took a bad game. He'd stand up for himself. He wouldn't take stupid penalties, but he'd fight. You know what I mean? And he'd hit. And the actual work rate and his engine was astronomical. We got two really good seasons out of him. The first year, and then the last. It was the last year of the Humberside Hawk in the old Premier League. Absolutely outstanding player. And if you ask a lot of the old timers who've been going a lot from all, he'll be in most people's dream teams without a shadow of a doubt.
And this is also a player that after he left Humberside, he went to Germany, played in the second tier for a couple of seasons, then went and played in the DEL for four seasons, and picked up a DEL championship.
He won it with that Cren, is it Crenfield Penguins? He won it with them because he was my favourite player. I kept like looking and see how good he was and what he was doing and that. He was a Canadian, but I think he had German parentage, so he got into there because I think they'll have had restrictions like what they usually do. I think he had 2 years here and then he went over to Germany with his German parentage, so he became a dual national in Germany. You still don't play in the DEL just because you've got that parentage. You play in the DEL because you're very, very good. Mm. So that's how good the kid was. And I mean, the second season that he was here, I mean, we had it was the last year of the Humberside Hawks, and they just went mental spending money on that. We had like Bruce Bell, ex-NHL, we had Derek Laxtal,
Graham Garden,
Bracky Pierce, Cam Plant. We had absolutely loads of players. Mike Bishop, who was his last season there and all that. It was a fantastic season. We got to the playoff finals but lost again to Sheffield. So that was the last year of the Humberside Hawks. But the two seasons that we had him, he became my favourite forward of all time, to be honest.
And that was the season where you also won the lottery to get Todd Bidner for a few games as well, as he did his tour around the British leagues.
We'd signed him. I think Bidner had played for us two or three times. I'm sure he played for Humberside Seahawks in 90. I think it was 93 when they first signed him. And then we signed him again. He wasn't one of my favourite players. He's a player who used to frustrate me as a fan because you could see he had it. But he wouldn't put it on all the time, if you know. I'd rather have players like Phil Huber and Brandon Benedict who would turn on, and Brendan Jameson, like I've just mentioned, that would turn up every game and just do what they had to do and play every game. That's the sort of players I like as a fan.
Okay, let's crack on and we'll go to your favourite goal. Now, this one's going to sting a bit for me. So, which is your favourite all-time Humberside goal?
There's a couple of memorable goals, and but the most memorable goal for me has got to be Kevin McNaught against your team, Nottingham Panthers, in the 1993 Wembley Finals, the sudden death overtime.
Yeah, the OT winner to secure a 5-4 win to get into the playoff final, beautifully assisted by former Panther Dan Dorrian, and he puts it away past Ian Young in net, and Humberside were in the final. And I can totally understand why you picked that, because at that time you've been going, what, 5 years?
Yeah.
Would you say it's fair to say that was probably the biggest result in your history at that time?
Yeah, it probably was. I think we won the Castle Eden Cup. I think we won it that year. I mean, it was the only time the Castle Eden Cup was taken away from Durham. But that had to be in front of live TV. I mean, we posted the link on it on the fans forum a couple of weeks back, and we were watching it from grandstand, and people will laugh at you now, but even like it made the snooker late, didn't it? They actually postponed the snooker because the game was that good that BBC were actually forced to finish the game off. And I remember being in the crowd. I mean, you know what it was like at Wembley, like most playoff finals. You'd had a few drinks by then, hadn't you? And halfway through the game, the plexiglass got smashed, didn't it?
Yeah.
And we was winning 4-2. It knocked the wind out of our sails, and Nottingham came back to do it 4-4. And then the actual overtime, you were all over us. I think you outshot us something like about 13 shots to 1 or 2 or something. Yeah,
I was actually watching it earlier today again in preparation for this, and it was just constant one-way traffic for the whole. There was one shot, I think it was Steve Moria hit.
Yeah, yeah.
And the netminder just got enough on it, and it was trickling towards the line, and the poor lady goes crashing the net and misses. But them's the sort of breaks that you need in those sort of games.
I can remember that as if it was yesterday, because like you say, you could see it was in slow motion, wasn't it? Mm. I think it was Dale Lambert and Mike Bishop actually even knocked the net off at the same time as batting the puck away from the goal. But going back to the actual goal, it was a 2-on-1 breakaway. I think it was a 2-on-0 breakaway, and it was Dorian, and we were going, and this is Kevin McNaught. And we nicknamed him Kevin McNaught plus Naught, or Kevin McNaught plus One, because that's what he'd end up scoring every game, you know what I mean? He was our reclass player, if you remember.
Yeah.
And he passed, and Dorian's got the puck, and we're thinking, oh, Dorian's going to, we've got a chance here. And we're all going, what are you doing? He's passed it to Kevin McNaught, and his experience, he just danced around him, didn't he? And I'm like, you can just imagine what the Humberside Seahawks fans were like, because we hadn't won much up until then, you know what I mean, especially the 3 years previous. So we were absolutely ecstatic. So that's probably the most memorable goal that I've seen as a Hull fan, but definitely.
Of course, the fairy tale didn't continue. You lost in the final, but...
Yeah, lost in the final.
Because I think at the time, Panthers have finished third that season. I think Hull have finished seventh. Oh, sorry, I'm sorry. Yeah, finished seventh.
We'd only qualified for the actual playoff finals, the quarter finals. We'd only qualified in the last game of the season. Mm. It was touch and go that we was going to get into the actual playoffs, and we did it. And I know all the way right through it, we got an easier group. We ended up with Whitley and Bracknell. I can't remember who the other one was, or we got in. And the players was like really up for it. So that's how we got through. So, and I know Dale Lambert, he's just put on it. He says he had one of them mesmerizing team talk in the dressing room before the game against Whitley up in Whitley, because we had to win that game to like sort of like qualify. I can always remember them sort of things as well, but it was a cracking game. It was just a pity that we couldn't go on to win the final, but like always, we never really win many finals sort of thing.
Okay, let's continue with your team and your second forward. So who's forward number two?
It's got to be Stephen Johnson.
So Stephen Johnson, of course, one of the Johnson brothers, son of longtime coach Peter Johnson. 13 seasons in Hull altogether, 592 games, 311 goals, 574 assists for 885 points. So, clearly a legend in, well, in Hull Park. So, is that why you chose him?
Not only that, he was a great captain. He was a captain for a long time, and you could see the players looked up to him. And, I mean, you've seen them three Johnsons. When them three Johnsons were on song, they were telepathic, and we had them for... Oh God, we had them for a lot of seasons. Oh, Quacks, or Stephen Johnson, and we all, as he's known, he's Quacks. He's stayed on, and he still lives in Hull. I see him quite regularly going around Hull because he works for FedEx. Seen him quite recently as well. Every time we start talking about, we're reminiscing and about it. And out of them three Johnsons, there was always Tant was the goal scorer. Shuggy was like the one that would like get into the. He would like to do the passer, but like Quacks would be the one that did all the hard stuff. He'd go into dirty corners and stuff like that. He'd take the hit. He'd make the assist. You know what I mean? He'd be a proper team player. And he scored. I think he's. You know, he must be the top British point scorer for any old team at the minute throughout his career. I always remember talking to him because he hardly ever got injured. He didn't get injured until really late on in his career. And he always used to say, he said, the only reason why a lot of players get injured is because. When they go to get hit, they tense up. He says, just accept that you're going to get hit and relax and take the hit. He says, because the time that you tense up, that's when you're going to get hit by a stick. That's when you're going to get hit by a strain knee. What wasn't supposed to hit you, but because you were not in the right position, you're going to get injured. And it was only the last couple of years of his career when his legs went on him, like with most players, that he actually got caught up. But he was absolutely outstanding for all. Every single game you saw him playing, he'd never have a bad game, you know what I mean? Mm. And he must have been, I mean, I know his dad coached him for a lot of time, but he must have been a coach's dream. Because he'd just do stuff for you, and you could see the other players would be looking up to him as well. Mm. And I mean, he probably is one of the most experienced. When you look back, I mean, I know we've got it's a different era now, but he still must be one of the most experienced British players that's ever played the game as well. You know what I mean? He played from the age of 12.
Yeah, you look at his career, he played many seasons for the Durham Wasps and won so many trophies with them. Also, an awful lot of appearances with Great Britain at under 18, under 20, and then senior level. So certainly very, very much a decorated player when it comes to appearances.
Yeah, very much. He's one of only two players that have had their shirt retired at Hull. I mean, we've been going 32 seasons, and there's only two players had the shirt retired, and he's one of them. Cloutier is the other one. That just shows you what we. I mean, we don't retire shirts, if you know what I mean. We should have retired a few more, I must admit. But is if you're going to retire a shirt, that's the shirt. So nobody will ever wear the number 10 in Hull ever again.
Do you think that he had a lot of competition as well, considering that he played the vast majority of his career with his two brothers? His dad was the coach for a lot of that time.
Yeah.
So that's going to put extra pressure on him. So to come out with the figures that he did. And the way he did is a lot of credit for the way that he played.
Of course he is, because anybody who knows Jonker will know that he won't give him an easy time as a coach just because he's his dad. In fact, it'd have been far worse because he was his dad. So that makes it even better, if you know what I mean. And he's obviously, he knows what he's doing, you know what I mean? But when you watched all three of them together, we had the privilege of watching them, all three of them, for about five seasons, and they were absolutely outstanding. And it was no better than when the goal would go in. It goes, goal scored by Johnson, assisted by Johnson and Johnson. It was Johnson, 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 every other goal. You know what I mean? It was fantastic. We should have been sponsored by a talcum powder company. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the tie-in's there, isn't it? It definitely is. Okay, let's move on to your final forward. So, Scoop, who completes your lineup?
Going with the legend of Jeremy Tendler.
Jeremy Tendler, of course, played for Hull Stingrays for four seasons between 2010-11 and 2013-14. 240 games in all competitions, 178 goals, 121 assists for 299 points. A player who I think was very much admired throughout the league by a lot of fans, was in the first All-Star team a couple of times in the Elite League. And like you say, a legend for the Stingrays. I think I know why you picked him, but why have you picked him?
He was just outstanding. He first came here, the first season he came here, he didn't score for about, I think it was about 8 games, he didn't score. And we were like, what's going on here? What's this? But Cloutier said, I've seen this kid play, because I mean, I got on really well with Cloutier, obviously, because I had a lot to do with the club and that. And Cloutier's gone, watch him, he's fantastic, fantastic. He's going to come. And then he scored against Edinburgh up in Edinburgh. And you could see the relief went off it. And then after that, it was just like bang, 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 bang. Goal after goal after goal after goal. No matter what team was playing, he was a short-handed king. He scored loads of short-handed goals. You know what I mean? He just sit there on the blue line and players would like leave him because, you know, if he gets the puck, he's going to score. And that's what was happening. You know what I mean? He was such a fantastic opportunist goal scorer. The trouble with him, he isn't our biggest point scorer for a reason, because he never used to pass the puck. He'd get the puck passed to him, you know what I mean? He got some assists, but obviously he was a goal scorer. There was, I know it says in the stats that he scored like 46 games. He actually broke the 50-goal mark in one of the seasons, because I did announce it when he scored it.
And yeah, he, first season, I think, he scored four in the Cup. And then 46 in the league. So, yes, and then one in the playoffs. So, 51 goals that season.
For an unfashionable club like Hull Stingrays, you know, because we were bottom dwellers for a long time. For him to come to this club and then score 50-odd goals, it just took us to a next level where the fans were getting expecting that we might start winning stuff, if you know what I mean. But, I mean, he played alongside some good players. I'm not saying he didn't, you know what I mean? Like, Jason Silverthorne used to feed him every season. Matty Davis used to make him into a good player because he'd feed him onto his stick all the time, you know what I mean? Obviously, you had to have a decent goalie behind him. You know, we had Bouchier and we had Bouncy. So, obviously, when you've got a player that scores a lot of goals, they're not exactly renowned for the back checking, which he wasn't. But he's not there to back check. So other players also made him into a great player, if you know what I mean. But to score as many goals as he did in the 4 seasons that he did for a team like Hull was absolutely outstanding.
He moved on to Coventry to win a playoff title. I remember at the time that he was getting a lot of criticism in Coventry from the fans.
Yes.
And I remember you particularly really sticking up for him.
The thing is, like, when he was at Hull, he'd be on the first line, but he had a coach that let him do what he wanted, if you know. I'm not saying let him do what he wanted, but let him express himself. And this is a problem we have with some players. And Lauzon had the similar sort of problem when he went to Coventry as well. If you know these players, I mean, I know Jeremy really, really well. I only spoke to him a couple of weeks back on Zoom. He's in Romania at the minute. He's still stuck there with all this COVID stuff. He can't even get back out. But he's living in a wooden shack that his mate's got with his family, and he's absolutely loving life because he thinks he's in Saskatchewan. But anyway, I'm digressing and that. But he's one of these players that would go out and enjoy himself, if you know what I mean. And Cloutier would let him do that. He'd let the players, but he'd say, look, you can do that as long as you perform at the weekend. And they give him the freedom. Then when them sort of players don't have that freedom, when they have to start training a little bit extra, or if they're coming in and the other players are going, well, you haven't scored for 3 games, it's because you've been doing this, it's becoming, and it sort of deflates the players. And then when that happens, then the fans get on the back because he hasn't scored 50 goals for them, like he scored for us, you know what I mean? And I'm sure Carl Lauzon had a very similar problem the year after when he went to Coventry as well. You've just got to have a good coach behind these players to manage them. And once you've got that, and then you've got other players around them that'll help them out, then players like him will score 50 goals a season, which he did do.
So that is your team. Colin Cavilla is the netminder. Eric Levine and Brendan Jameson on D. Phil Huber, Stephen Johnson and Jeremy Tendler make up the forwards. Do you think they'd be a formidable proposition even there?
At the top of the game, without a shadow of a doubt, if that's the first line unit you've got, with them two defencemen, that goalie, and them three as a unit, Jeremy Tendler scoring the goals, Quack's doing the hard stuff, and you'll be doing the magic up front, passing and stuff like that. That would be one hell of a first line, that one, for definite.
So let's move on to the honourable mentions. So these are the players that you seriously considered for your team but didn't quite make it. You've got quite a few. So let's reel through them. So who were your honourable mentions?
Passy Raitanen. I've got to give Passy a mention. I feel sorry for Passy at the minute because he was an absolute excellent goalie. Really good character, really, really good in the dressing room. Really funny bloke. Outstanding goalie. You looked at him, and I always remember an interview with Dave Sims made about him. He played for Sheffield for, I think it was a game, and he turned up. And
a couple Sims of games, was like, it was against Nottingham, and he won them both.
He won them both, didn't he? He turned up and he got a leopard skin thong on or something like that. Yeah. And he took his jacket off and he'd have all sweets in. And Sims is like, oh, God, what's going to happen here? And he went out and beat Nottingham hands down, you know what I mean? But that's the sort of goalie that he was. He would have been in, but like Cavilla was just a little bit better than him technically, if you know what I mean. Bouncy as well. We've had some really good goalies at all. We've had some duds, but we've had some really good ones. Boucher was a good goalie. I feel sorry for him, Bouncy, but there wasn't much between Passy and Cavilla, that's for certain. Defence wise, you're looking at Scott Young, fantastic skater. You can't knock him. The only thing I had against him was the way that he played. His discipline wasn't brilliant. He'd take really stupid penalties that would kill the team. And in the end, that's why he didn't play. It was in Hull for Dundee that he got abandoned because he attacked one of the referees. But actual playing ability, he's probably the most gifted out of the lot. Kelly Reid played for us for 2 seasons. Brilliant skater. Loved him to bits. We've had some backs and centre forwards. Scott Morrison.
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah.
You look at his statistics, but I mean, going back, that was the old Heineken League where teams were getting wiped out like 15-2 and stuff like that. I mean, he was the most unfittest looking forward that you'd ever meet, you'd ever see. But he'd score 5 goals a game. You'd see him at the end of the period. He'd be sat there having a fag in the outside on the benches and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And then going back out and scoring another 3 goals, and you're thinking, "There's hope for me yet." You know what I mean? With my foot belly sort of thing. Fantastic player, Matty Davis. Is an honourable mention.
Still
at all. He's an old lad. He loves it. He loves playing for all those little Matty. Doesn't score many goals. Probably can't shoot as well. But his passing is on point. It's absolutely. I mean, he scores more assists than anybody. He's nearly as many assists now as what Tony Ann would have got. You know what I mean? It's that bad at doing assists, but he's fantastic. Honourable mention to him. We've had some good. Gion Doucette.
Yeah.
What a find he was. You had him at Nottingham. What a find he was. Fantastic. And him and Lauzon together were an absolute unit. And I think the year after when they split up, because Lauzon stayed with Hull and then Doucette went. I can't remember if he went to Cardiff, didn't he? Or did he go to Europe?
He went into Europe and then we signed him mid-season. So he came to us, I think, sort of December time from memory. He's just a natural sniper.
He's a natural sniper, but you know what I mean? If you him and Lauzon together were telepathic, them two were fantastic. For the Sting, the season that them two were together, they were really good mates as well. They both knew each other when they first came over as well. Both got the best out of each other. So we've had some really, really, really good forwards, if you know what I mean. But the three that I've gone with and the two defencemen and the goalie, in my opinion, that's probably the best that we've seen at Hull.
Yeah. Who was the closest of those honourable mentions to getting in? Who was the one who you really, really considered?
Passy Raitanen, probably.
Passy, yeah.
Well, there was another honourable mention, I forgot to mention him, Ashley Tate.
I remember Mike Blaisdell sending him to Humberside to toughen him up a little bit, and then he took him back in Nottingham when he was Panthers coach.
We had him for a couple of seasons. I was friends with his dad. His dad's just passed away recently, Gavin. Real nice bloke, isn't he, Gavin? And Gavin always used to say it was one of the best things that he's ever did. Was moved to Wolves because he got played as a penalty killer. He got played on the power play lines and he learned to play them. Whereas he wouldn't have got played like that playing for Nottingham because Nottingham was in the B&L at that time.
Yeah.
And still police. There's no way he would have got there. He absolutely loved the time that he was at Hull, and it's probably prolonged his career. I mean, he's still at Basingstoke now playing, isn't he? So.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's got longevity out of it, but he was a fantastic forward. But for us, for a couple of seasons, for definite.
Okay, we're going to finish the show as we always do with your favourite moment. So, Scoob, what is your favourite moment in all the time you've been watching hockey and all?
That's got to be beating Sheffield to knock them out of the playoffs in 2012.
Yeah,
It's got to be that.
2012, a 5-2 victory in the second leg after a 2-2 draw in Hull on the 1st of April 2012. A great April Fool's Day for the Sheffield Steelers. That was the first time you'd reached the Elite League playoff finals weekend.
Yeah, yeah,
what was
yeah.
it particularly about the game, the moment that made it so special?
It was the full weekend, the full week. If you remember, Finity had an argument with Colt King, didn't he? And he binned him halfway. I think it was the week beforehand. And so they had no fighters. So that just gave carte blanche to Derek Campbell to do what he wanted. And the both games, he was running rings around him. You know what I mean? You could see there was nobody there prepared to drop the gloves with Derek Campbell. The full build up to the week for the week, I was getting involved in it and like, helping the players out and stuff like that. We played them at home on the Saturday 2-2. I think it was they was beating us 2-1, and we scored. And I put on, you know, that old A music that everybody hates. Mm. And I played that. And Cloutier was doing it. He was lifting his arm, both his arm up, going, ole, ole, like that for the last 2 minutes. And the crowd was going mental. And you could see the Sheffield players going, what's going on here, Cloutes? You're embarrassing yourself. And Cloutes is going, yeah, but look at the crowd. Look at my team like that. So we knew someone was onto something. And then we went to Sheffield the day after. And it was, you know, where the Steel Dogs were. Sheffield, sorry, yeah. It was there, so we only got like 80 tickets. We was going mad because like, oh, you're only having 80 tickets. So there's 80 of us there, and I always remember Curtis Dooley, who I'm really friendly with, and Dominic Osmond and all them lot. When we won the game, I went downstairs into the dressing room and says, I can't, and there was like going, the build up to the game, we was right above their dressing room, and all you could hear was us, and he said, we've got to go out there and beat these. And we beat them 5-2. Derek Campbell scored an hat-trick. I mean, yeah. Derek Campbell doesn't score many hat-tricks, but he scored an hat-trick. Jason Hewitt scored an own goal, so you can imagine what way it was like. And like all the way home, we was just like, we was ragging Simsy all over. I mean, I know Simsy's going to come back and he's going, we beat you all. But for one game, that's why it's such a special game for the old fans, you know what I mean? It might be sad in some people's eyes, but we don't win many things, if you know what I mean. But that game gave us a bit of hope. And it was just one of them games where you thought, we've done something absolutely special because nobody expected us to win. I can't remember if we were 7th or 8th, and there was 1st or 2nd. I can't remember which one it was. The game itself, we was all over them, if you know what I mean. It was like you was watching the Sheffield Steelers team, but you weren't watching the Sheffield Steelers team, if you know what I mean. They were the Sheffield Steelers you were used to playing against, if you know. I don't know what it was. I don't know whether there was something wrong in the dressing room or whatever, but we just kept turning them over and turning them over and turning them over. So you can imagine what the journey home was like. I mean, it's an hour's journey home for us. We all met them up in the car park, and we must have waited all the neighbours, because there was loads of us in the car park waiting for them just to come home. I mean, that was our final. I mean, we got to the final, and Nottingham hammered us in the semi-final, but that was like our final, if you know, because we'd never been to one of them finals. And we are a bottom feeder. We were a bottom feeder club. And just to win one of them games, that's the special memory that you take on. So that's got to be my most favourite memory of watching the whole team.
Scoob, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on my top line. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, fantastic.
And thank you to you for listening. We'll be back very soon with another My Top Line. But until then, thanks for listening and goodbye.